Yesterday on the show, I decried the upcoming move by Senator Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia. He wants to give the FCC more power to regulate content on the airwaves in this country, particularly not just when it comes to indecency, but when it comes to violence. And he doesn't want to limit the FCC's power to just the broadcast airwaves, but expand it to cable and satellite television. Here to talk about that and other media-related issues is Professor Jeffrey McCall of DePaul University, author of a new book called Viewer Discretion Advised, Taking Control of Mass Media Influences. Jeffrey, thanks for your time this afternoon.
It's nice to be with you, Paul.
What are your thoughts on what the senator wants to do?
Well, you know, these are really tough issues, and I've got to say that I share your concern. But I also have a feeling, though, that in a sense the media industry has brought this kind of regulation on itself. If nothing else, I think Senator Rockefeller's introduction of this legislation is a shot across the bow. I would like to think we lived in a media world where we don't need the government to regulate and get involved in content. But I think the bad behavior of the media industry over the last several years has led us to this point. And frankly, I think it's one of those cases where politicians are getting a lot of input from constituents. There are surveys out there that show that over three-fourths of the American public believes that the media are contributing to a moral decline in the country. And politicians are going to respond to that, and I think that's why we're seeing what we're seeing.
Well, there's no doubt that the media gets lower Q ratings than Congress and the president, which at this point you would think nearly impossible. We're frankly down there with carnival employees and lawyers, and we understand that, believe me. But what do you mean that we're responsible for bad things in this country, and you make it seem like we're irresponsible?
Well, in some cases, the media do act irresponsibly, Paul. I mean, you know that we had shock radio jocks in New York laughing while a homeless man was talking about sexually assaulting the Secretary of State. You know, we've had radio contests where they make people drink too much water and we had a person die. So, I mean, those are extreme cases, but I think you can find enough cases like that around the country in most markets where you can find that there is irresponsible behavior. And that's where we end up, I think, with Congress wanting to step in, because those rather sensational cases get blown up. I mean, the wardrobe malfunction in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and you had Bono launching a particular F-word during a live broadcast on a Golden Globes show a couple of years ago. And I think that's the kind of thing that Congress is wanting to stop. And frankly, I think if the media industry would step forward and say, hey, you know, that was too bad when we let, you know, celebrities say particular bad words live on television, we're going to try to stop that because we have the delaying technology available to do that, I think that, you know, guys like Senator Rockefeller would back off. The problem is when these things happen and the FCC cracks the whip, we have the entertainment industry going to court to try to sue to defend their First Amendment rights, quote unquote, to have celebrities go on the air and say bad words on live television when we don't need to have that. And I mean, I know there is a point where you say we've got to really protect the First Amendment. That's what this country is founded on and whatnot. But one of the premier defenders of the First Amendment was Justice William Brennan, who wrote in an opinion one time that, and this is a quote, "It is apparent that the unconditional phrasing of the First Amendment was not intended to protect every utterance." And I think that's where we need to try to find a middle ground here between having too much regulation, but also from having the media act irresponsibly and putting live microphones in front of Cher and Nicole Richie when they're receiving awards, so they can blurt out barnyard phrases and that sort of thing.
Yeah, here's the problem, though, Jeff. I really think that all of these things you're talking about are small, isolated instances. They are not part of a larger trend in the media today. And more importantly, I think that the marketplace handles this very well. If the FCC had done nothing after Nipplegate with Janet Jackson, the public's outrage directed towards the NFL and MTV and CBS certainly sent the message to those organizations that they needed to change their ways. If, in fact, there was too much violence in any particular TV show for a lot of people who were watching it, I think that they would express their opinion that way to those TV content providers, as they do, by the way, by either watching or not watching. I detest our government being turned into America's nanny when parents in this country aren't doing their jobs. All of a sudden, adults in this country can't enjoy entertainment that is designed especially for them, and it has to be regulated because of isolated incidents, bad parenting, and special interest groups that are getting way too much favor from politicians who pander directly to them.
Well, you've got some very strong arguments there, but a couple things I would keep in mind is, number one, this initiative in Congress is very much bipartisan, and also...
That doesn't make it okay. That just means politicians on both sides are wrong.
Also at the Federal Communications Commission, and those people are sworn to... uphold federal law. And that's one thing to keep in mind, is that there is a federal law on the book, okay?
I want to change it.
Well, and that's where I think people need to step forward and say we need to change that. But there's a federal law on the book that says, you know, no indecent, profane, or obscene communication over broadcast airwaves. Now, by the way, Senator Rockefeller's initiative into cable and satellite, that's going to raise another whole set of First Amendment questions since those are purchased, services and whatnot. But let me also address your point about parenting. You know, no doubt there is bad parenting out there, but a society, I think, owes it to the kids of bad parents to try to watch out for them as well. And we do that with regard to, you know, smoking laws that kids can't go in and buy cigarettes and all kinds of things like that. And I think that's where, frankly, a lot of the congressional action is coming from, is to say, you know, we wish we didn't have to do this, and parents should be more responsible for what their kids are absorbing. But a heck of a lot of parents don't pay any attention. And shoot, think of how many parents let kids have televisions in their own bedrooms, where they can't even monitor what the kids are watching.
But that slippery slope, Jeffrey, leads to laws that tells parents they can't smoke in their own house, and it leads to parents being fined or imprisoned for giving their kids cheeseburgers or junk food in the house. At some point, we have to say, this is not the government's job. And in everything that you've just stated, I think that all falls under that giant umbrella.
Yeah.
It's News Talk 1120, KMOX, Paul Harris, talking with Professor Jeff McCall of DePaul University, author of a new book called Viewer Discretion Advised, Taking Control of Mass Media Influences. Let's turn our discussion away from Congress and television for just a moment and to the recent debates about the fairness doctrine in Congress. There are those who think that me expressing my opinion every day on the air means that the opposite side should have to have equal time to express their opinion every day. What do you think about the return of the fairness doctrine and the chances of it ever coming back?
Well, I'm really opposed to the fairness doctrine on a couple of different levels. One is that when it was in place for many decades, it just didn't work. And it served actually to stifle discussion rather than enhance it, and that is about as far as opposed to the First Amendment ideal as you can get. I really don't think it's going to get any traction in Congress. I think a lot of people like to saber-rattle about that, and I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see, you know, some legislation introduced to bring it back. But the fairness doctrine really doesn't work from a practical standpoint. And theoretically, I don't like it either because, you know, when Paul Harris goes on the air and says, here's my opinion, well, how much freedom of speech do you have if the second you give your opinion, you have to put somebody on the air who has to disagree with you and basically neutralize whatever you have just said?
Right.
So I think that is really counter to the First Amendment. And I look at that as a much different kind of thing than when we were talking earlier about regulating indecency. But
you have a chapter in the book called Television News or MTV.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Well, that chapter is about the fact that television news, I think, has maybe gone way too far in becoming an entertainment-driven industry rather than an information-driven industry. And I know television is a medium of emotion rather than information, and television news does much better showing us emotion than it does telling us about information. But the Television News or MTV chapter talks about all the techniques of entertainment that television news uses now to try to encourage us to watch or to excite us to watch in ways that don't necessarily enlighten us. And by that, I'm talking about they go live on the scene from places where there's no news going on or the news is long over. We use a lot of fast graphics and cuts and edits and sometimes even, you know, music behind straightforward news reporting, that sort of thing. And, we've got the fuzzy animal story in almost every television newscast now. And so the thought is that we're getting away from the news and starting to pander and force more production practices into our newscasts than information. In the long run, I think that trivializes the news. And by the way, news audiences, as you know, in television are declining. And I think one of the reasons is when people tune in to get the news, the people who really want the news, they're not finding it, so they're going somewhere else to get it.
And that's the next thing I want to bring up. And by the way, I'm going to mention everything you just said to my colleagues at Channel 4, where I do the Hot Topic segment on News 4 at 6 right after this show every day.
Great.
So, yeah, with me, you got the mass media covered, both radio and television.
I appreciate that.
Plus, I'm online and I'm in print. So I got you covered in every medium you could come up with here. But let's talk about the multiplicity of media and the amount of information that's available today. Your book is subtitled Taking Control of Mass Media Influences. Are more and more people consuming less and less media, or more and more media giving them an even greater variety of viewpoints?
Well, actually, people are consuming less and less media, but they have more options to consume less from, which I know sounds kind of contradictory, but the bottom line is, in an era when we have so many different avenues from which we can gather information and entertainment, people are engaging in what we refer to in the academic world, and I know this sounds kind of stuffy, but people are engaging in what we call information segregation. So rather than getting a lot of information on which to base their opinions or their politics or their attitudes, a lot of people are going to certain places for information that support back up what they already think. So we see that a lot in the internet community, where people go online to get news, but they're going to particular blogs or to news sites that have a particular political bent to them. And one of the things I encourage in my book, in terms of like taking control of mass media influences, I challenge people to get information from a wide variety of sources. Listen to the radio, watch to TV, get some newspaper, go on the internet, and also go to internet sites that they wouldn't necessarily agree with. Read the blogs of people who have different points of view that you do, and have a discussion with them, or to at least find out what the opposition thinks. If you listen all day to just, you know, people on the left or people on the right, you're not going to be very well informed, and it's going to be harder for you, I think, to make sense of today's really complex issues out there.
I agree with you. I think this is the big thing. And when you say less media from more options, that's a very good phrase for exactly what's going on in American media today and for the American consumers. Jeff's book also touches on media literacy. He decries a lack of media literacy in this country and encourages you to do more as well to make your voice heard. I have no problem with people's voices being heard when it comes to media. I am not one of those who sits in his high, tall building and says, "We will pass the word on to you and you shall have no input into it." My problem is when politicians get involved in that process, and that's where my biggest disagreements are with you. But I appreciate the conversation, Jeff. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Paul.
Professor Jeff McCall from DePaul University, where he's a media studies professor, author of the new book, Viewer Discretion Advised, Taking Control of Mass Media Influences. There will be a link to it within the next half hour on my website, harrisonline.com.